the matter of Brenda Miller versus the state-operated school district of the city of Newark. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning. I'm Roman D. Rivera from the law firm of Greenzy Hollandas.
Good morning. Assistant Attorney General Donna Aaron, Commissioner of Education.
Good morning. William P. Hannon of the law firm Oxdale Cohen on behalf of Brenda Miller.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Rivera.
May it please the court. Your Honor, I request 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
That's fine.
So in this matter, which involves an employee who was classified in a position and was ultimately moved to an unclassified position, the issue is whether she is entitled to both protection under Title 11A and Title 18A. It's clear that the legislative intent was that Title 11A and Title 18A would not apply concurrently. This is supported by the law, as well as practically, in multiple jurisdictions in the state, it is impossible to administer and would result in chaos in these districts if we were to apply this principle. There's numerous cases that were cited within our brief. I particularly want to focus on the case that was captioned In Re Tenure Hearing of Folkmer. And in that case, tenure protections not only were deemed to be not available for individuals who were covered by civil service protections. Furthermore, in Anderson v. DOP, which is not a decision that is precedential upon this court, it was clarified that employees who are under classified service are distinguished from Title 18A. And that's evidence of the intent, evidence by the agencies that were implementing these statutes of how they interpreted them. In fact, in that case, Mary Anderson was a clerk secretary in Jersey City, and she did not achieve permanent status. However, the voters by referendum instituted that she would in fact be deemed classified under civil service. Ultimately, she was not deemed to have protection under civil service under Title 18A and was deemed only to have protection under Title 11A. When you look at the statute, and what this really comes down to is a review of 18A-28-2, which when you look at that in connection with 18A-17-2, you must really determine what in fact was meant by the term chapter. I think if we're going to look at that issue, which we briefed, it must be reviewed at the time in 1967, when the term no person in classified service shall be affected by this chapter, that in fact meant chapter law, which is our position. Chapter law covered the entire provision of 18A around tenure law. It did not just intend to cover teachers. And that's evidenced by the way that the legislators enacted it, as well as subsequent decisions. As you look to the In Re Folkmer case, specifically, in that case, the court stated, the Tenure Employees Hearing Act thus establishes an entirely new and comprehensive procedures for the resolution of all controversies, including charges against all tenure employees not subject to civil service under Title 18A. It went on, though, and I believe this is critical in the analysis. It is designed to replace the removal and disciplinary procedures relating to various classes of employees, long in force under a variety of provisions in New Jersey school laws, and then lists teachers, secretaries, district clerks, janitors, and et cetera. The Folkmer Court interpreted the law to exempt not only those employees subject to Chapter 28, but all the classes listed above. This cannot be ignored by a literal interpretation of this section. A bright line was established between 18A and 11A, which, based upon our review and our position, results in Ms. Miller not being able to benefit from both having civil service protections as well as Title 18A protections. In the remaining arguments, I'm not going to reiterate because they're in our brief about the impact on the district. But the point here is that you have a literal reading by the appellate division of this section, which in the context of the way that this legislation was enacted, was not the intent of the legislature, and quite frankly, when you review the context of the terms in that legislation, it should be broadly applied to include not just this specific section, but a broader section to ensure that school districts are not burdened by having to maintain both civil service protections for certain classes of employees and at the same time maintaining Title 18A tenure protections.
Do you agree that there is not necessarily a conflict between Title 11A and its protections and 18A 17-2 in this particular setting because the employee didn't have any protections under 11A as a result of changes in position? So whatever rights she has are purely under 18A. So there's not necessarily a direct conflict between the two titles operating in their own spheres.
Your Honor, in this particular case, she did not meet the requirements to achieve tenure. Because
no, you're not answering my question. Is there a direct conflict as a result?
The statutes?
Yes.
No, there's no conflict in this particular case.
Okay.
There's no conflict because once she was reclassified, the only appeal was to the Commissioner of Education. But the plaintiff is arguing, yes, I went to the commissioner and I showed that I was a secretary from 07 to 014, to 14, that's 7 years, and the statute 18A 17-2 gives me tenure. No problem, no conflict with civil service. I just go to the commissioner. What's wrong with that?
But there was a conflict because the statute, which I referenced, 28-2, exempted Title 11A civil service from the benefit for employees who were seeking the benefit protection under tenure.
What you're doing is saying, well, she was somehow a different type of secretary when she was under Title 11 from when she was a secretary under 18-7-2.
Yes, she became a confidential secretary, where she was no longer entitled to protection under Title 8.
So let me ask you this question, this plain language. Sure. Title, chapter, section, right? We understand what that is.
We do.
Okay. Okay, so when it comes to 18A28-2, title, 18A, right? Chapter 28, section 2. And then the language says, shall not be affected by any provisions of this chapter. And chapter 28 just deals with teachers, people who are certified, not secretaries. Why doesn't that end the analysis? That's a plain language. Why need we go any further?
Because the plain language doesn't take that review, does not take into account that at the time, chapter included the chapter law. And when you look at the background under PL 1957C181S5, it applied to the entire act, not just the chapter.
You're looking at the session laws of 1967, chapter 271.
Yes.
So because that same law created 18A 17-2, you read them in tandem.
Yes, Your Honor.
I see.
But
now, it's interesting. This is such a quirky situation. When I look back at all of the earlier commissioner decisions that had come, many of them were janitors, carpenter, not other teaching staff members or people like that would be covered under 18A 17-2, except for the Anderson case where someone was in the title of clerk hyphen secretary, whatever that meant at the time. Is that the only one of all of the commissioner decisions that arguably are in conflict with the appellate division decision that touches upon a person in a secretarial position, to your knowledge? I could not find any more, but I'm asking you if your research disclosed
it. Yes, in our research, we could only find the Anderson case as a potential case where it was the exact MIRA situation. As what we've had here with Ms. Miller.
And were the facts the exact mirror? I mean, because here, this was an individual who had rights under Title 11A and under the Merit System Board, and lost those rights as a result of the change in her position. Merit System Boards acknowledged that the person had no rights under Title 11A. So is it the exact same conflict that was existing back in the Anderson case when there was a more direct conflict with 18A and the old Title 11?
My reading of the Anderson case was that she didn't achieve permanent status. Here, Ms. Miller did achieve permanent status. In 2012, she voluntarily agreed to become a confidential assistant, which is common in multiple public entities, mm-hmm. and those individuals are not covered by civil service. So she made that decision. And at that point, she moved into a separate classification in terms of how employees are treated.
Why did it take 17 months to notify her?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't know why it took 17 months other than it's a large district and they did not provide the notice.
But she had been under civil service under her previous classification, and she gets what seems to be a promotion to classified assistant, and then she loses the protection?
So she moved to a position which paid her more, and she would have more responsibilities, i.e. reviewing confidential information, labor and negotiations matter, disciplinary matters. So it was indeed a promotion that she voluntarily accepted.
So according to the statistics that have been given to us, there are only 10 districts out of, what, 590 districts that are civil service?
Correct, Your Honor, and those include two of the largest districts, so we're talking about thousands of employees.
But in those 10 districts, it would be this, you're arguing these secretaries are not protected by 18A17-2. They're the only secretaries in the state who aren't protected by it.
So, yes, Your Honor, these employees who are subject to civil service, which would include these secretaries as well as others in these districts, would not be entitled to 18A unless they move into a position that is not a civil service position. So in Ms. Miller's case, if she would have remained employed for a longer period of time, she would have accrued tenure under 18A.
And your entire argument is really, it really comes down to what chapter means. So when we're looking at the statute, and when we typically look at the language over there, chapter 28, you're saying for these purposes, you know that chapter 28 over there? That's not really a chapter.
Well, Your Honor, I spent a lot of time preparing for this, and I came down to that same conclusion that unfortunately this case really turns on that one distinct issue. So, but I do want to add one thing to, and as I listened earlier, it helped put it in context. In looking at all of the cases, and particularly cases that were cited by my adversary, the Spivak case, and additional cases that talk about the purpose of the tenure law, which is to be liberally construed to provide efficient service for public employees. And something I may have misspoke, but the term efficient is clearly provided as part of the justification for courts to liberally construe tenure laws. And in those cases, what it meant was we had an individual who served as a temporary or regional position for remedial students, and they extended tenure from teachers to individuals who provide that service. And in all, it was always expanding classifications for employees previously not covered or not entitled to other types of protections. But it was also to be efficient. Here, and I want to emphasize this on the court, from a practical standpoint, practicing in this area for almost 19 years, this would not be efficient.
So tell us, you earlier said that it would lead to chaos.
Yes.
Explain that.
So really practically, when an employee is hired, particularly these secretary employees, for the first year or 3 years, depending on which law they're under. So under 11A, the first year or so, there's what's called a working test period. They're evaluated. At the conclusion of that working test period, the employer has the right to simply let them go without any reason or any specific reason other than we no longer want your service. At the same time, individuals under tenure or most school districts during those first 3 years before they acquire, they can be what's called non-renewed. That happens at a certain time period at the end of the academic year. And it's similar in concept, but simply you're being non-renewed. As employees move through both of these tracks, the employer would have to now manage both at the same time to ensure we're complying with our civil service restrictions. I'm not supposed to move. We're complying with our civil service restrictions, which is simply, you know, we were entering into what's called the CAMPS system, and we're going to label you a permanent employee provided you get through the working test period. If, in fact, you need to be disciplined, we will service you with what's called a preliminary notice of disciplinary action and a final notice, have a hearing before a neutral party in-house, and then you go to the OAL, the Office of Administrative Law, for a full hearing. That's your process, your due process rights under civil service. Under tenure law, it's completely different. You now have to, you get, after 3 years, you obtain tenure. The board makes a determination in closed session as to whether or not they want to proffer tenure charges, and then you go into, under the tenure law.
I'm trying to understand the inconsistency, because we have the tenure law under the education law, and then we have civil service. So civil service has this probationary period. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming the probationary period does not exceed 3 years, typically.
Does not, correct, Your Honor.
So then where is the inconsistency? If the person is under civil service and is still protected by the education law, if the person doesn't make, under the Civil Service Act, if you want to get rid of the person because the person hasn't performed, you know, according to standards during that period, you get rid of the person, and now you have no problem under the tenure law because the person never reached the 3 years, correct?
Correct.
But so I'm trying to see how the tenure law is somehow adversely impacting on the Civil Service Act.
Once you get past the 3 years and the individual has tenure and there's some sort of act which results in conduct unbecoming, which is a terminable offense under tenure, now that individual would also be entitled to a separate due process hearing under civil service, which could result in two adverse decisions.
But that's not the case we have here. That's another case where there's a complete overlap, and that's the so-called two bites of the apple. There's no two bites of the apple, because at the time that this person is discharged, the person is only operating under the education law and really has just one bite of the apple. The person's got to go to the commissioner, and that's it. Am I wrong?
But this individual didn't achieve tenure under my argument because...
Your position, in fairness to both sides, from your point of view, the employer didn't have the three-year period to review this employee and decide to confer tenure status under 18A 17-2 once the person started in the unclassified confidential position of secretary.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right? And if you had had those 3 years and that had passed, you wouldn't be making this argument to us, because you would not see a conflict between Title 18A and 11A.
I do not, and because there are other employees who, over the years, have taken advantage of this dual status, mm-hmm. but the employer knows, okay, now once we move you to unclassified status, the clock starts ticking, so we can evaluate you for a tenure position, which is a much greater benefit than a classified position with the protection of simply just having to go through a due process hearing. Was the standards are completely different.
Was her job functions materially different when she was placed in this unclassified status?
Yes, she became a confidential assistant.
Was she still performing secretarial functions?
She was, in addition to being privy to confidential information, and in addition to, well, not yes, she was still performing secretarial functions.
Go ahead.
Can you explain, I understand the answer that you provided, with careful inputting of data into a computer system explaining this person has now moved from position A to position B, here's the timeline, have that in mind. Why wouldn't that address the problem? You're going to have a manager overseeing an individual. and making determinations about that individual's performance. Why is it so complicated?
So when before the individual achieves tenure, you would have just different evaluation timeframes that these entities would have to manage and ensure that the burden with respect to any type of potential disciplinary action or review would be met under both standards. And so conceivably, I think that knowing the entities that would have to manage these situations and the difficulty they have already complying with the numerous laws around civil service, I believe that it would lead to disruption and chaos that wasn't intended by the legislature.
Jess?
You had said that chapter means session law, chapter of the session laws, in your exchange with Justice Delecchia. And that's obviously important to the analysis, the statutory construction analysis here. When we see in a statute this title, this chapter, this section, generally I think it's fair to say we infer that it's the chapter in which it ends up in NJSA, or the title or the section. Is there any suggestion in the legislative history here or anything elsewhere that would indicate that the legislature uses that term chapter to mean something other than the place where this particular provision is ultimately going to land in the law?
We reviewed the cases. I relied back on Henry Fulcomer, where the court clearly determined that if an individual is covered by Title 11A, they're not intended to receive protections under 18A.
I'm sorry, and my question wasn't clear. I'm talking about your argument that when that word chapter in the statute is not referring to Chapter 28, and therefore not limited to people with a teaching certificate. It's referring to the chapter in the session laws, which has a broader scope than the ultimate Chapter 28. That's the argument I'm referring to. So what I'm asking is when we see the word chapter, or for that matter, title, this title in a statute, and that's often language we see in statutes, should we be thinking about anything other than it's the title or the chapter or the section where that language appears? And obviously only chapter is relevant to session laws, because that C is the chapter there. But why should we infer it meant the session law and not the finished product statute?
I think you have to read it in the context of the issue that we have before us. And at the time that this was written, chapter was routinely referred to as chapter law in other instances. And in this context, candidly, it's self-serving, but it explains the issue and it provides a reasoning as to what was meant at the time.
What it would mean is that you're telling us that the legislature knows what the term chapter means when it puts it in the New Jersey statutes annotated. But in this one instance, okay, different from maybe thousands of other instances where it refers to chapter, this chapter doesn't mean chapter. And that's how we're supposed to decide this case?
At the time, when reviewing the legislative history, and upon our review, we found that chapter law was a commonly used term, and it encompassed the entire chapter, not just the specific chapter.
Candidly,
it doesn't make sense. It's unreasonable that this significant exclusion, which was relied upon for over 40 years at this point now, by numerous courts and specifically the commission, was not the intent here.
Why isn't it fair that the distinction made in Chapter 28 is between teachers and secretaries? That the legislature intended to treat them differently.
But it begs the question, why? Why would you provide secretaries, and no disrespect to secretaries, but our teachers are really driving the positive results in our school districts, why would you provide them with less protection under our law? It doesn't make sense. You would certainly want the teachers to be afforded with the protections of the Civil Service Act.
They're very different jobs. They're in Secretary Title, Civil Service Act. It's
secretary in 17 are pretty much similar jobs, where the teachers have a totally different situation, different position, different skill set.
Correct.
I mean, so why not treat the secretaries in both instances separate from the teachers in Chapter 28?
I agree. In numerous municipalities all across the state, secretaries only have civil service protection. And I candidly think that that was the intent here, that they would retain the same protections that they have in their they're adjoining municipalities, as opposed to also offering tenure protection, which is what this particular section of the statute was. The purpose was to say, no, secretaries and individuals covered by civil service would not also get another tenure protection. Civil service protection is tenure protection. Title 18A is tenure protection. There's no need for individuals to have both, other than just to add another layer of protection, which is not afforded to the most important individuals in school districts, which are our teachers.
Well, they didn't need to do it for teachers, because teachers are teaching staff members. They're only really going to be covered under 18A. 18A is geared specifically to deal with that situation. Secretaries bridge multiple situations. Can I just test your argument about chapter, when you're dealing with laws of 1967, chapter 271, which is the statute that the law that created 18A28-2 and 18A17-2. That's what you're referring to, correct? When I look at 17-2, do you happen to have it handy? And you look at C, they use the word chapter in that statute as well. And there they're clearly intending chapter to refer to a more refined, pointed citation to another aspect of Title 18A. So I'm just curious about how broadly we can accept in the same law any use of the word chapter as having to mean all of Chapter 1967, laws of 1967, Chapter 271.
So, Your Honor, if I may clarify.
Please.
With respect to your reference to 18A:17-2C.
Yes.
Are you referring to the last sentence where in fact says Article 2 of Chapter 6?
Yeah.
This title?
Yes. They're using chapter in a much more refined version.
Absolutely. It's identifying the specific chapter, whereas my argument would be in the following, well, just comparing it to 28-2 or 18A:28-2, there's no specific chapter mentioned. It just says this chapter. This chapter, we infer, means the current chapter that we are, that we're referencing, which is 28.
Is he referring to the session law?
Yeah, he is.
Yes.
So that's the difference. I mean, the legislature knows the difference of how to refer to a session law, mm-hmm. and how to designate a chapter in our statute book.
You're saying they did it differently in 1967?
A little bit.
Okay.
Understood.
Thank you, Your Honor.
One last question, just in it. I know you have some rebuttal time, but your adversary says that Heeden, the decision of this court in Heeden, counsels a different result here. Do you have a response to that?
Your Honor, I do not have a response on the Heeden issue at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Ahrens.
May it please the court. As this court has reiterated many times, the right to tenure is created and governed entirely by statute. So tenure protections exist only where there is compliance with the precise terms of the statute. Here, the legislature has made clear that classified civil service employees of school districts are not entitled to tenure protections under the school laws of Title 18A. Thus, Brenda Miller, who was a classified civil service employee of the Newark District for most of the time that she worked there, did not accrue tenure under 18A during her time as a civil service employee. The appellate division found that the civil service exemption in the tenure law applies only to teaching staff. The commissioner disagrees with the appellate division for three reasons. First, the plain language of the civil service exemption does not limit its applicability to teaching staff. It applies on its face to any person in the classified civil service. Next, the legislative history is also instructive. And I would direct you to actually the 1960 laws, which is when the Tenure Employees Hearing Act was enacted. That law revamped the whole education tenure process, and it applied broadly to any employee of a Board of Education in this state who is under tenure in any office, position, or employment covered by Title 18. It also incorporated the language that of the civil service exemption and stated that the act shall not apply to any person holding any office, position, or employment which is in the classified service of the civil service. So it is clear that the legislature, when it revised the tenure law, intended the civil service exemption to apply to all tenurable positions. Finally, the appellate division's interpretation is problematic in its implementation. The appellate division stated that the civil service exemption applies only to teaching staff who hold classified civil service titles. But under the Civil Service Act, teaching staff members are specifically excluded from the classified civil service. So under the appellate division's interpretation, the civil service exemption would not apply to anyone and would be superfluous. In short, Ms. Miller worked for a number of years as a civil service employee, during which time she had full rights and protections under the Civil Service Act. But she did not accrue tenure protections under Title 18A during that time. The commissioner's decision, finding that the district did not violate Ms. Miller's Title 18A tenure rights, was correct, and this court should reverse the appellate division's decision. I also want to address Justice Albin's question about if there's a conflict in the different years, the probationary years. This court has recognized in a number of cases that the concept of tenure, the employer has a right in certain types of tenure situations like education tenure, and there's also Merlino, which was a case involving a different type of tenure, that the employer has a right to have that probationary period, to have non-renewal for a number of years before the employee gains tenure. The problem here would be, while a person is in the civil service, there's a working test period, which is shorter than the 3 years that you would gain, that you would have the tenure. So after they survive the working test period, the district loses the ability to continue to evaluate that employee for the remainder of the 3 years because they cannot fire that person. They have civil service protection. They cannot fire them for no reason at that point. So I think that is where there is potentially a conflict between the two laws, is that in that probationary period. The other area where there is a conflict is that when an employee has civil service protection, it is their entire job is governed by the Civil Service Commission. They have a job title, and the duties are determined by, you know, what that title entails under the Civil Service Commission. And if they were to change jobs, they would, or if the job were reclassified, they'd have to go through a whole civil service process, which we don't need to go into here. But my point is that the employer doesn't have the freedom to decide exactly what those job duties would be, because that's governed by the civil service. So I think those are two areas where there is potentially a conflict between the two laws, which is why the legislature determined that employees would either have one type of protection or a different type of protection.
Can I just, just see if I understand your point on that. Sure. You're saying it starts at year zero, and obviously this individual had a much longer period of working, but let's say someone starts at year zero. In a year, they get the civil service protection.
I'm not exactly sure what time.
But let's say they do.
There's some working test period.
There's post-test period. After that, they can't be removed without the civil service prescribed due process.
Correct.
And then they're switched into a non-civil service position, maybe just shy of the 3 years required to get tenure. You're saying that the overall scheme, as these two statutes, these two titles fit together, envisions a period in which the district can, without cause and without the civil service protections due process, terminate the employee prior to that employee getting tenure.
Right. Under Title 18A, that envisions a three-year period that the employer could is able to evaluate that employee and determine and non-renew for any reason, except for obviously a discriminatory reason or something against public policy. But, you know, in general, whereas when somebody gains civil service protection after their working test period, then the only way that person could be removed would be going through the civil service process, and you'd have to meet one of the statutory, you know, cause reasons for removal.
If I can follow up with one question, is it the department's position that the three-year period before tenure should be a three-year period in which the employee can be non-renewed in the summer between school years without cause? And if so, why is that so important to the scheme?
Yes, it's that you do have those 3 years, and this court has recognized that again in Merlino, and then there was a Camden. It was Camden Board of Ed versus Alexander, which was another case where this court held that this non-renewal period is a statutory right that the Board of Education has, that was the legislature making that determination that in exchange for this very valued job protection of tenure, there's a three-year probationary period. Many, many employees in public service work without any job, you know, security at all. So people who have tenure have this very important job security, but in exchange, the board has this three-year period to see if they're a good fit for the district.
Now, we are supposed to assume that the legislature knows the meanings of the words that it uses in its laws, yes?
Yes, yes.
they know what the word act means, and they know what the word title means, and they know chapter. So when we look at 18A 28-2, easily could have put shall be affected by any provisions of this act, that would be broader, or title, correct?
Yes, although I do have to say that, I mean, I did do some research into the legislative history, and I originally, in 1960, it said this act. In 1967, there was a recodification of all of Title 18 into Title 18A, and there's 20 pages or so of the back, you know, where pieces of it went. And, you know, I can't tell you why that got separated.
Was there an earlier draft where the legislature was using act with respect to that provision, Title 18A 28-2?
Yes, in 1960.
So think of that. There was an earlier draft where they used act. We'll assume that the legislature knows what the term act is, and that the final version is chapter. Why should we not just accept that the legislature knows the meaning of how they're titling these particular laws in the books once it's in the New Jersey statute's annotated?
Well, I think it's more compelling the fact that if you read 28-2 narrowly to only mean teaching staff, only what's in 28-2, then it doesn't apply to anybody, because teaching staff since 1908, when the Civil Service Act was enacted, have been excluded from the classified service. So if the legislature deliberately did that, then it's really unclear why they did that, because then they're saying teaching staff who are excluded from the classified civil service, if they're in the classified civil service, are exempt, and that doesn't make sense. So I can't really answer. I can tell you that in the section where they explain where different pieces of law went, I believe it says editorial as far as what the change was, and I don't know quite what that means. I don't know if OLS has something to do with that.
Teachers are never now in Title 11, correct?
Teachers are never in the classified service, correct?
Secretaries can be in Title 11.
Yes.
And can be in Title 18 as well, correct?
Correct.
We It may well be that the legislature was content to have two protective statutes over these secretarial positions. And it wouldn't be the first time that there's overlap between agencies, correct?
Right. No, I understand that. What I'm saying is that if you read 28 as being, if you read 28-2, which says that no one in this, let me say the exact language.
Was in the classified service of the civil service?
Yes. If it says, no person who is in the classified service of the civil service shall be affected by any provisions of this chapter, and you say, and you're reading that as meaning, as the appellate division did, no teaching staff members who are in this, it's only this chapter, teaching staff members can't be in the classified civil service. So it's not
there's
really
nobody
clear.
There, but
perhaps
they
wanted to be
someday.
Very clear about it and make sure there was no confusion by putting it in both. They're not in Title 11, and just to be sure you understand that, we're expressly stating in this title that they're not.
No, it's saying if they are in Title 11, then they are not covered by the tenure law, but they can't be in Title 11. So that's what is confusing.
Do you agree with your colleague that the word chapter is a reference to session laws?
Yes.
Because you do.
It's the only thing that makes sense to me.
I understand. Have you seen that anywhere else?
I can't say that I've never come across this, but I'm not a
that's a pretty
expert on legislative history.
But you obviously deal, and you've been before
yes.
the court many times. You deal often with statutes and regulations and so forth. This is a whole new concept to reading the word chapter in legislation and in our statutes. Would you agree with that?
Right. All I can say is that the 18A is broken up all over the place, and like the tenure hearing employees law was what was one statute has been broken up into like four different sections of eight, and it may have been just overlooked that.
But if it's a mistake, if it ultimately was a mistake, don't we apply it nonetheless?
Again, I think you would still need to look at the actual language of the statute. 28-1 and 28-2 both refer generally to not to teaching staff, to anybody. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the chapter is dealing, the rest of 28 deals with teaching staff. But 28-1 defines position, and it says, as used in this chapter, the word position includes any office, position, or employment. And then 28-2 talks about no person who's in the classified service shall be affected by the provisions of this chapter. And then the rest of it is all about, every single section is about teaching staff. I don't know, I don't have a...
But as a matter of, if we do kind of infer that maybe there was an editorial mistake, and obviously in a complicated statute, that's just how people make mistakes.
That's the only...
We just apply it, though, don't we, even if it's an error that needs to be corrected?
Well, I think you can also look to the legislative history of the actual statute itself that first used this language that made it clear that it did apply to secretarial staff. The fact that it wouldn't make sense to only apply it to teaching staff just as a logical implementation of the 28-2. And the fact that it would go against really case law of this court and years of case law that talk about, understanding that the board has this right to non-renew employees for the first 3 years, which this would undermine.
I'm sorry, Justice Solomon, go ahead. I have a question. Under your analysis, all the years in which Ms. Miller was acting, was operating in her position under the civil service or controlled by civil service law, when she gets moved to the confidential position, to whom does she turn jurisdictionally for her rights if she feels that an error has been made with regard to that position? Let's say she feels she was being dismissed arbitrarily or assigned impermissible duties. Because when I read the earlier commissioner decisions, the commissioner has been taking the position he has no jurisdiction over these individuals who were once in civil service. But that doesn't sound exactly like what you're saying now. It sounds like the person now converts to rights that she can seek whatever they may be, before the Commissioner of Education, and in order to acquire tenure, she has to serve the requisite period of time in order to get that particular job protection under 17-2. So is that how you look at it?
I'm sorry if I misspoke before. What I mean to say is that at the time that her position was reclassified, if she disagreed with that action, she felt that she's still doing the same job duties and she shouldn't have been taken out of the civil service, or she shouldn't be given a new title or anything like that.
Rights are to
her
civil
remedy
service.
Is with the civil service.
And she
commission.
Went there, and she went there too late, and the Merit System Board told her that.
Right.
So
at that point, the Commissioner of Education has no jurisdiction over.
Okay,
her
but
duties.
Suppose there was some other issue related to her job. Would she come to the commissioner?
At which point, I'm sorry.
During that second year after her job had been reclassified.
After her job's been reclassified and she's out of the civil service.
Yes.
She doesn't have tenure yet, but right. I don't know what, you know.
But the only place she could turn to would be to the Department of Education
right.
and the commissioner.
Right, at that point, because she's no longer in the civil service. But while she's in the civil service or she's complaining about something that has to do with the reclassification of her civil service position, the Commissioner of Education has nothing to say about that. That's what the legislature is saying, is that.
So essentially, everything starts over and all rights are whatever they are under 18A.
Correct.
Okay.
She needs to serve 3 years.
Does anything look funny about this picture? This person has got civil service protection. Then the school district says, hey, I'm going to put you in the unclassified status, make you subject to confidential stuff. And then before she hits 3 years, this dumps her. It really looks bad.
Well,
no?
How it looks, I mean, I can't really opine on that. What I can say is that if she had the narrow issue that the Commissioner of Education had to decide and that is before this court has to do with whether the Commissioner of Education has any jurisdiction 2 years later to deal with her some complaint she has about her civil service title, and he doesn't. All he could do was look at, did she obtain tenure after she was no longer under the jurisdiction of the Civil Service Commission? And that was just the narrow issue before the commissioner. What you're talking about, she may very well have had a claim, you know, a civil service claim. I'm not arguing about that.
Or her reading of the statute protects this type of manipulation, moving, you know, getting the person out of the civil service merely to fire them because they haven't hit 3 years.
Certainly, if she had a complaint about how she was being treated while she was in her civil service title, she had a right to appeal that. There's no one questioning that. And it's the issue here is that
she was treated fine during those. She had no reason to complain during the years she was in her Title 11 position. It's only after the district moved her out and decided, okay, now that you have no Title 11 protection, and now that you have no Title 18 protection, this is a very good time to fire you.
Well, the moving her out, she had a right to appeal. If her position's reclassified and it's no longer a civil service position, you have a right to appeal that. And you know, I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but she had a right to appeal that, and certainly, you know, we're not disputing that.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I have nothing further, just that it's the commissioner's position that the appellate division's decision should be reversed.
Thank you. Mr. Hannon, I know you're ready to go, so I want to ask you, because you optimistically asked for only 15 minutes, how much time do you anticipate? We're a little after 12:30, and I want to see how long the argument will extend and if we should start in a half hour.
I think the argument has already covered some of what I was going to say.
How much time do you think?
I would assume maybe 10 minutes.
Let's go. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. In the decision below, the appellate division performed a very thorough explanation of how it applied the plain language of NJSA Title 18A:20-2 to the facts of this situation. So I'd like to make some comments on the implications of the school district's suggested interpretation. As I think has been alluded to, Public law in 1967, Chapter 271, was the adoption of Title 18A, which replaced the repealed Title 18, which had previously governed New Jersey education law. PL 1967, Chapter 271, contains the entirety of Title 18A as it existed at that time of its adoption in 1968. So that spans, including the index, over 700 pages, 76 chapters in that public law. If we want to take a look at why the district's interpretation of this chapter to mean session law or chapter law just doesn't make sense, it's important to keep in mind the canon of statutory construction that when a word or phrase appears more than once in a statute, it should have the same meaning throughout. The clearest example of why the district's interpretation just cannot work from any standpoint is in chapters of Title 18A that contain short titles. For example, Title 18A, Chapter 65-1 reads, "This chapter shall be known as and may be cited as the Rutgers, the State University Law." Title 18A, Chapter 74-1 reads, "This chapter shall be known as the State Library Law." And that's a very simple example of why the district's interpretation cannot be reconciled with each other. We'd have, again, the entirety of that public law, which was the entirety of Title 18A as it existed in 1968, would be known as and cited by multiple conflicting titles, which very clearly apply just to the specific chapter that they are contained in the codified version. And I believe, as a couple of your honors pointed out, the legislature was very well aware that it could use the phrase "this title." This title appears dozens of times in public law in 1967, Chapter 271, and it demonstrates that the legislature was very aware of its, was very capable of using this title when it wanted to refer to the entire title. For example, in the first chapter of Title 18A, Title 18A, Chapter 1-1, which is a definition section applying to the entire title, the language is "as used in this title," clearly indicating the indication that these definitions and these phrases are to be applied throughout the entire Title 18A. The appellate division's interpretation applying the plain language of this chapter to mean this chapter, Chapter 28 of Title 18A, creates no conflicts with the various provisions of 18A and fits all other statutory construction canons that the appellate division discussed. We submit that applying the plain language as well as the context of public law in 1967, Chapter 271, leads to the conclusion that the appellate division's interpretation that this chapter means this chapter, Chapter 28 of 18A, is the only reasonable interpretation. Briefly, moving on to Ms. Miller's tenure status under Title 18A, Chapter 17-2, this court has held before that if an employee satisfies the express conditions of tenure, then they're entitled to tenure unless an exception applies. There's no other statutory authority that prohibits counting Ms. Miller's time spent in a classified secretarial position prior to 2012 against her time spent acquiring tenure under 18A 17-2. And in fact, there's a provision of 18A cited by the appellate division that provides 18A colon 6-31 that provides that nothing contained in this title shall be construed to affect the tenure or civil rights of any person. I would submit that this anticipates the potential existence of multiple tenure protections. And I'd just like to comment on a couple of the comments made by my adversaries here. There was a comment concerning the working test period being a shorter time period than the 3 years required to acquire tenure. Well, as Justice Alvin pointed out, only 10 out of 590 school districts in the state of New Jersey are civil service jurisdictions. So the secretaries in the other 580 school districts, they do get the civil service job protections after the working test period, because so that would apply in those districts. And I'd also just point out the predecessor statute to 18A colon 28-2, which was public law in 1957, Chapter 181. Only concerned school nurses, so there's no exclusion of secretaries in the public schools in that chapter. Unless there's any questions, Your Honor, I'd be happy to answer those.
Go ahead.
Just have one.
Yes.
Your adversary said that the job titles, even though they were both secretary, one was confidential secretary, were substantially different. How does your argument of fulfilling the three-year period, how is that satisfied if the job titles are, if the job requirements are substantially different?
Well, we would disagree that the job duties were substantially different. That was not an issue that was raised in the court below. The appellate division found that it was undisputed that she served in secretarial positions at least from 2007 through 2014. And the way that Chapter 17-2 has been interpreted, it's broadly speaking about the duties of a secretarial position. It's dependent more on the duties being of a secretarial nature rather than the specific job titles that somebody may have. And I'd also note that in Ms. Miller's appellate appendix, there's a job description for confidential assistant at PA 24 in appellant's appendix, which makes it pretty clear that she was, that even though she was a confidential assistant, she was still performing secretarial duties.
I have a question about a statute we haven't touched on before, and it's the one that gives the state district superintendent the ability to appoint, transfer, and remove clerks. It's 18A 7A-42. I'm sure you're familiar with it. My question to you is, does it help you, hurt your argument, or is it neutral? Because it says the district superintendent can remove clerks, and I think that includes secretaries, pursuant to the provisions of Title 11A of the New Jersey statutes and the provisions of NJSA 18A 17-1 et sec. They're not referring to Title 28 or the other more specific procedural removal mechanisms. They're pointing specifically to the statute that deals with acquisition of tenure of secretaries that is at issue. It's included in that compilation. So does that help you or hurt your argument?
I'd say it's neutral, Justice LaVecchia. I think that part of the statute is basically just saying the state district superintendent has the authority of a board of education in a non-state controlled school.
Doesn't it suggest that the legislature was viewing rights acquired under 17A as separate from the rest of Title 18A's discussion of tenure rights and how it relates?
Yeah, I think specifically pointing out both of those
can help you.
So I guess I would agree to you. It would help.
I mean, I'm not sure how well they were thinking about it, but it's curious to me that when they're talking about removal procedures, they're talking specifically about the compilation that addresses the very unique way secretaries can acquire tenure rights under Title 18.
Yeah, certainly the acknowledgement that secretaries in public schools do have job protections under Title 11A and Title 18A.
It could be neutral too.
Your adversary in the commission.
I'll go with your interpretation. Justice.
You're off neutrality.
That's far by.
The commissioner and your adversary both argued that if, in fact, Chapter 28 means Chapter 28, as in the final statute, then the universe of people as to whom the section applies is zero, because it's only teaching positions that are covered in Chapter 28, and they are not in civil service. How do you respond to that?
Well, I agree with the comment that was made during the argument. I think it could be a...
That's a dangerous statement, by the way. A lot of different comments have been made.
It could be a situation where, you know, it's clear that teaching staff members are not civil service employees under Title 18A, and that limiting 28-2 to employees of Chapter 28 emphasizes that teaching staff members, as covered by Chapter 28 of 18A, do not have any civil service rights.
But there's obviously a canon of statutory construction that says that the legislature doesn't throw in provisions that are superfluous and are meaningless, and that seems to be the argument that your adversary and the commissioner are making, is that is this is a meaningless provision because no one ever would be in the situation that it addresses. How do you respond?
I'm not sure there's a specific response to that, but I don't think that, you know, even if that provision seems somewhat superfluous, and again, I'd say that just affirming in Title 18A that teaching staff members that teaching staff members wouldn't be affected by civil service. But I don't think that can overcome the application of the plain language of 28-2 to secretarial tenure. So I don't think that would, in addition to the other issues with adopting the school district interpretation, which would, you know, which I think, frankly, would wreak havoc on how to interpret the various provisions of Title 18A. I don't think that would be sufficient to go away from the plain meaning of the statute just based on the potential duplicative nature of that, of the reference to teaching staff members in 28-2.
True to your word. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Rucker.
Mr. Rivera, 2 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just starting on the last point with respect to review of 18A 7A-42, would like to note that upon review of the next chapter, which is 18A 7A-43, which talks about tenure rights, it speaks of tenure rights in the following: except as otherwise provided in this amendatory supplementary act, any person serving under tenure or permanent civil service shall retain all tenure rights and may continue to serve in the district pursuant to this section. And it's helpful to see that this is in the section regarding state control, which was Newark and Jersey City were subject to this, both having these two types of classes of employees. And here I think this point illustrates that the legislator intended that this would cover either, you'd be covered by either one or the other types of tenure protections. So I wanted to make sure I made that point. And on the heat and analysis question, just to respond more fully, Your Honors, I believe that this heat and analysis was clearly overlooks this dual protection issue and the problems that it will create in districts. Heaton stood for the proposition that employees can negotiate greater benefits than what the statutory protections are, which we all understand. However, there must be a limit to which this court will liberally construe tenure laws in favor of employees. And for those reasons and all the reasons listed.
If I have one last question. With respect to the 7A provision, you just said that the word or is in there,
yes,
between tenure and permanent status. Is that really inconsistent with your adversary's argument? Because she's not claiming any civil service rights anymore. She's saying she has tenure status. She's not claiming both rights, both sets of rights.
But I think it underpins and supports our argument that you can only at one time have one type of tenure protection. What I'm going to say is either tenure under civil service or tenure under 18A. Certainly in Ms. Miller's case, yes, that follows true, that she had civil service protection at one point, moved to an unclassified position, and then began accruing protections under 18A.
But I think she's saying, and maybe another employee would be in a different situation, but I don't, as I understand her argument, she's simply saying that the time she spent in civil service should count toward the accrual of tenure for her. Thank you for giving me the verb.
No problem.
Not that she's entitled to both sets of rights.
Correct. That is her argument, which we disagree with for other reasons. However, this also, I think, is important for the court to be aware of, as I believe this decision will now lead to individuals claiming that they are enjoying both civil service protections as well as tenure under 18A at the same time, not waiting and saying, I did accrue this while I was a civil service employee, so in case I need it, it's there. I believe that this decision will be interpreted that way. However, I do also think this illustrates that the legislature intended that these be separate benefits to protect employees. And then one last point, I just want to emphasize the case we cited in our brief, Columbia Board of Ed, where legislative inaction in response to clear agency conduct or action, the commission following these rules for years, is granted great weight as evidence in conformity with legislative intent. I was remiss in not mentioning that earlier, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you. For those reasons, we ask that the court reverse the appellate division's decision. Thank you.
Thank you to all counsel. Another very fine argument.